And welcome back, everybody. This is From the Wild Podcast. I am your host, The Shadow, and many people know me as the one weird guy, which is not inaccurate. But I got an interesting show tonight, today, and this is definitely one that is either going to make friends or make enemies. Neither of which is the primary focus. If anything, this is just to address a very specific question and a problem that is plaguing theology, whether you are a believer or a non-believer. But before I go any further, I do want to do a couple of quick shout-outs. And the first one is that this show is brought to you by Breakaway Media. And this is my personal venture where I do a lot of graphic design, advertising design, things like that. Whatever you may need, Breakaway Media can help with it. And even if you don't need me to make anything for you, I can at least teach you how to use some of the tools and help you understand some design concept to help whatever promo or venture you have in the work be a little more effective visually. Also, we are streaming on Parapost Network Central. This is a very, shout out to Brian Laverty and Parapost. And I know some of you may have issues with me streaming to a paranormal podcast network, but here's the thing. Parapost is not just paranormal anymore. They are starting to branch out to other avenues. And if you have a show, get a hold of Parapost Network Central on Facebook, and Brian Laverty or one of his staff members will reach out to you and help you get your show and get your show out there to a whole new range of audience. And best of all, it is free. And also, last but not least, this is something that I've recently started getting into, and that's trying to get into better and healthier living. And we have Health Empowers You. So if you're looking for, smoothies or recipes, they are going to have coffee and tea available soon. But right now you can get a guide for a recipe book for 200 smoothies. So check them out. So again, that is Health Empowered You. You can find them at healthempoweredyou.net. That link is in the description down below, as well as any link. And speaking of link, if you can do me a favor, I am trying to grow the Breakaway Media official page. So if you can head on over there, hit follow, hit like, and help me grow that to where I can actually stream all of my shows onto that page and have one general place for people to find all my content. So, I'm going to get the show started. And first up, I'm going to bring, normally I would say my partner in crime. And I'm not sure how I feel about that because we're not actually committing any crime. But the way things are going, what we believe in may end up being criminal. So, Neil Mao, my cohort. Hello. Good to have you back.
Hey, it's going, brother. How's it going, brother? Sorry.
No problem. Okay. And, So we have with us somebody I've known for several years, and I met him when I was a paranormal investigator, and we've done some shows together, we've done some projects together, and we've had quite a few interesting conversations. So I thought the three of us might be able to shed some light and perspective on today's topic. And he is the man and mind behind Paranormal Consultant. And again, I've known him for a while, and all I can say is just follow the conversation and don't bail on us just yet. Hear the conversation through. So without any further ado, Matt Barron.
What's up, everybody?
Hey, Matt.
I love that intro. Love that.
Well, you know me.
Great disclaimer.
Right. So before I get too far into the subject, how you guys doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm hanging out here at the lake.
I'm here, I think. I don't know anymore. I don't know if I'm coming or going.
Well, I do want to apologize real quick for any racket you may be hearing in the background. We're just now having our first day over 80. So I got my AC and fan on because as much as I love doing this, being around this much tech, I'm sitting next to a couple of little furnaces. I got this big tower and monitor. It gets a little warm over here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got my fan on too.
They say rain is coming my way, and I'm looking at clouds. So you got, if it gets too rainy, I apologize.
So today's topic, the war within, which denomination is right. And before we let the conversation go, I do want to set a couple of points on this, just to set the tone for this conversation and for our viewers and listeners. This is not to say which denomination is right or which denomination is wrong. The whole point of that question is that it's a question that everybody tends to ask when they talk about religion. And you have a lot of infighting, you have a lot of dogma, you have a lot of doctrinal rift. So hopefully we'll be able to address some of these concerns and, you know, at the very least, help the viewers and listeners think of tools to be able to use when asking these questions so that they can at least make the decision for themselves that helps them, you know, that suits them the best. And if any of you who are watching or listening have any kind of disagreement, please reach out to me, let me know, tell me what you think. And I would be more than happy to address your comment either during the show while we're live, or if you make the comment after the show, I will address them on the next show. So we'll start off with where our faith is and, you know, why we start with that. So Matt, tell us a little about your faith.
So originally, I'm here in Central Pennsylvania, and we're obviously a big Christian area. I've grown up Methodist. I was confirmed in a Methodist church, born Christian, born again Christian. And through the paranormal, it's led me kind of deeper in my religion. But it's also opened me up to a bunch of different things, including becoming ordained. So, you know, to me, it all stems, for me personally, it's my journey. It's a personal journey. So I've kind of, at the moment, kind of backed away from the church setting and started focusing on me for my belief system.
Okay. Neil?
I'm a Catholic. There's really not a whole lot.
Sweet, I love it. Sweet, love it.
So, I mean, what brought you to that?
I went to church with my now ex-girlfriend, actually. And I was always looking for a church to belong to. I always just wanted to go to church just so I had somewhere to go to pray to God, you know. Mm-hmm. Sit in his house, and all of a sudden, you know, boom, it just started pounding on me. And he kept saying, hey, I'm here. I love you, you know. And I heard him. I felt him. And ever since then, I just was hooked. Like, I just stayed a Catholic because I loved it so much.
Right.
It's awesome.
Well, for me, my mother was raised as a Methodist, and when she had me, she, you know, still had her faith, but she kind of got away from Methodist and got into the non-denominational, and that's where I was raised in. And of course, for those of you that know me, my life took a pretty hard left turn for a while, and it wouldn't be until I had an overdose that I tried to get back. And in the beginning, you know, I was all committed. I was sold out. And then I began to see some issues that really bothered me, and I began to question. Then I started getting into other things, and, you know, now I'm trying to get back. And I still have those questions, but I've learned that I cannot define my relationship with God based on the behavior or the choices made by others. And I think that's one problem with Christianity. People tend to make the decision based on those around them or trying to make people happy, or they have a problem with religion because they see people behaving contrary to what they're preaching. So, but yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. And, you know, right now, with everything I've seen, all I've got left is Jesus is the Son of God, that he was crucified for my sins, and that he was resurrected, and that he is the only shot for me to escape the justice I so rightly deserve. And believe me, if I don't have him, what's coming my way is not going to be good.
I mean, he died for all of our sins, man.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, you're forgiven. So.
Right. No, it's not, for me, it's not a question about that. It's, you know, now that I am saved, you know, I'm trying to live the right life.
Mm-hmm.
I feel lost.
Because of struggle.
Well, it's not even so much a struggle. It's like the topic of this show. What denomination is right?
And, all of them? I mean, they preach Jesus?
Well, they're all right, and they're all wrong.
Hmm. It depends on what your flavor is.
Yeah, well, there's that, but I'll just use a personal experience, and this is something that, you know, my wife and I, we talked about. We went to another state, and going down there, she said, and she told me this afterward, she went down there expecting to be more like me and more open-minded to Christianity. But by the time we left, it was actually the opposite. I had become more disillusioned with the church. I wasn't going to stop believing in Jesus, and I wasn't going to stop believing in what he did, but I started to have some big questions about church, and I've talked about this on, you know, the last show that you and I were on, Neil. When she was there, my wife is, she's a voluptuous woman, and we'll just leave it at that. And, you know, she wasn't dressed inappropriately, and she wasn't dressed sexually. She was dressed as a woman, and she was told that she had to change the way she dressed because other men had problems with lust. And when she told me that, her and I had the same reaction. Why is it her responsibility to adjust for the issues of other people? The whole point is they need to control themselves, or at least their wives.
The good men do, anyway.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that was just the start of it. And things had gotten to the point that by the time we left, I just, you know, like I said, I could not bring myself to be somebody who could be involved with church, because I realized that when I first started to go back, I had committed myself to everything and I was focused on it. You know, I mean, I was just focused on the word, I was focused on the gospel, I was focused on salvation. That's it. I was ignoring everything else around me, which one point is good, but the other point is that it's also dangerous, because if you don't know what's falling apart around you, how are you going to know what the problem is or how to fix it?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that was the issue I had. So yeah, and years later, my wife came back to me and said, yeah, I was really going down there expecting to be more like you. I did not think you would be more like me. So in a situation like that, how do you deal with that? I mean, what do you tell somebody who is asking the questions about faith and religion, but they see all these other things in every denomination? How do you respond to people like that?
First thing I would have said is, maybe this just isn't your church. You know?
Okay.
I mean, different churches are going to give you different vibes.
Right.
You know? They're all different. And to me, I don't mean to make it sound like just pick your poison, but it literally kind of is. You got to find a church that is teaching the way you agree with. And then stick to it and go to Jesus, go to God. You know, I mean, when I was a kid, I was told as a Lutheran, if you go to a Catholic church, you're going to hell. You know, and then right. I had Catholic family that would take me to Catholic churches, and I got told the same thing. If you go to a Lutheran church, you're going to hell. You can't read their Bible. You can't this, you can't that. I've noticed a change, at least in the Catholic Church anyways. We don't teach that. We're told specifically by the Pope to respect everyone else's religion. We don't have to agree with it, but we should respect it.
Right.
Doesn't matter if you're a Buddhist. It doesn't matter what you are.
Right.
I'm going to respect you because you are another human being, and love thy neighbor does not mean just the person next to you. It means everyone.
Right. And it doesn't just mean the person in the same denomination either.
No, everyone. Everyone in this entire world.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Neil. Like, even as a Methodist, you know, different Methodist churches have different vibes. Like, what I would say to people, at least starting out, is what do you want? What are you looking for? What is your journey? What are you longing for? And start them off with, like Neil said, you know, what is the word? You know, follow mm-hmm. Jesus, follow his teachings, follow his preachings. And just like with looking for an apartment, a car, whatever, shop around. Look, it's not just, okay, well, where's my nearest church? No, I mean, start there if you'd like, but just go around and every Sunday go to a different church until you feel home, until you get that, you know, lovey-dovey, ooey-gooey feeling. You know, like
that's what it was for me.
Like for me, I've grown up in the same church, so that church to me will always be home. I will, no matter what, I am confirmed in that church. I am a member of that church, and I will always be a member of that church. Even when I lived 3,000 miles away, I am still a part of that church. And right. there are just some things to where, you know, do I agree with everything that church says? No. Are there some things that, you know, I like? Absolutely. But I go to different Methodist churches, and you can even tell the difference. And I'm sure it's the same with Catholicism, Lutherans, Baptist. I mean, just look at even Baptist. You got the regular, like, run-of-the-mill, and I'm using layman's terms, folks, just the regular Baptist, and then you got the Southern Baptist. You know what I mean? It's just like that. Are they still Baptist? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Or even the Amish. There's New Order, Old Order. There's a bunch of different ones. So just find which one that you feel at home, to where you feel connected.
Right. Now, a lot of time when you come across people that are, you know, caught up in that denominational strife, what would be the first thing you would try to do to build a bridge so that not so that you can at least try to, you know, force people or push people into the direction, but build a bridge so that they can, if they decide to cross it, they can do it on their own. What's the first thing you would do to try to build that bridge?
Meet them wherever they're at in their faith, and then try to educate them and expand it further when they're ready.
Okay. See, what about you?
For me, and we've just kind of discussed this, I think, mainly backstage, and Neil, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, you know, we get taught to love everybody. You know, when you start talking about denominations and you start talking about separations, you're already going against what you apparently believe. You know, it doesn't matter what denomination you are to me. You can be Catholic, you could be Methodist, Lutheran, Baptist, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's the end game. The end goal is still should be the same. And
what's your focus there?
Exactly. And, you know, one thing that really hits home for me is the whole love thy neighbor. Mm-hmm. And the way Jesus, when he was here and he practiced, you know, did he go hang out with all the ritzy ritzes? No, he was with the scum. He was with the unwanted.
The sick, and the poor,
exactly. The damaged. He didn't care either. He didn't say, oh, well, I'll only hang out with Jews or I'll only hang out with these people. He loved everybody. And to me, when you start putting that difference between denominations, to me, it's like saying, gee, you're better than Jesus. You know what I mean? If you're supposed to be following Jesus, you need to follow Jesus. Follow his example.
A prime example is I want you to look at Simon or Peter, as he was later named by Jesus. Mm-hmm. Look at him. He was a drunk. And he was violent. He tried. He would kill people. You know what I'm saying? And Jesus still loved him.
Cut you, then pray for you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hell, Matthew was a tax collector.
Yep.
He was the worst. I mean, he was nothing against these people, but he was like the lawyers of today. That's how society looked at tax collectors.
And Mary was supposedly an unsavory woman.
Yeah.
You know, I mean. The Catholic Church recently come out and said she wasn't a whore, but she was promiscuous.
You can read between the lines.
Yeah.
You can't forget about John. He would refer to her as the Son of Thunder.
Yep.
I mean, this is the guy that would just, you know, today he would, what most people would refer to as a small town good old boy that, well, just boys will be boys and get into fight.
Yep. And you can even look at Saint's plate, I believe is Saint Augustine or something like that. He was a knight, a womanizer, an alcoholic. And yet he was still canonized as a saint because he saw the light of Jesus Christ and he was saved.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's go further beyond that. You know, it's not just the people, but where was Jesus preaching? Was he always in temples? No, he was in the streets. He didn't care. Mm-hmm. If there was one person or 1,000 people, he was leading the example. And to me, yep. That's the way it should be. Whether you're at a Lutheran church, a Methodist church, Catholic church, grocery store, be the example. You know, that's what it should be. Because just like with these shows and everything that we're doing, you know, that positivity will be infectious. People will be curious mm-hmm. on why you are the way you are.
Right.
Yep.
And, you know, along that note, I mean, one of my biggest issues with any denomination is the fact that you get a lot of people preaching, but they're not really practicing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's rampant everywhere.
Yeah. And that is such, I mean, that's almost a root problem, or at least one of the core symptoms of a root problem. And how would you address that to somebody who may be demonstrating that kind of characteristic?
I just tell them, until you're willing to follow your very own words, don't preach to me.
What about you?
Honestly, like, this is one reason why I kind of stepped away from the church setting, because again, it, you know, the religious side is a personal journey. And for me, I just need to refocus on me. But mm-hmm. what it comes down to, and this is something that, you know, the jokes, we all know what jokes I'm talking about with the Catholic Church and a bunch of other churches. We've all heard about it. Here's the thing. Man was created flawed. We are mm-hmm. made sinners.
Yep.
No matter, somebody who is a Bible, excuse the term, Bible thumping, God fearing person will screw up. Is it a one time thing? Is it all the time? Mm-hmm. You know, it's case by case basis. Yeah, you're gonna have that no matter what. And it's not just, you know, churches. Politicians, sports, you name it, celebrities, it's all the time. It's everywhere. So mm-hmm. again, it's all comes back to, where do you feel the most comfortable and competent? And I'll be honest, like, there's, through my church, we've had at least 6 or 7 different pastors. They all preach differently. Some I like better than others. The one we have right now, great guy, absolutely great guy. Some of the things he says, I'm a, okay, well, I see your point, but you know what I mean? But again, it's, don't focus on the negatives. Don't focus on the negatives. Just listen to the message. Listen to the message. And if you want to take that home with you, great. If you don't, okay. You know, it's, again, it's just up to you.
Right.
That's one thing I can say in the Catholic Church anyway, that the message is always continuous. That there is, they don't really variate very much. The only thing that variates is it a jubilant priest, or is it an old one that doesn't really care and he just wants to, you know, give you the
traditional liturgical type?
Yeah. Like, I mean, there's boring priests, and then there's really just absolutely phenomenal priests.
Yeah.
You know,
I am very familiar with the boring preachers, because, I mean, it isn't just in Catholic, but you get those that, okay. A little bit off subject here, but kind of on subject, Bible translation.
Mm-hmm.
For me, when I listen to an old guy try to do Shakespearean, the King James Version,
yeah,
I always end up 15 minutes later.
Yep. Yeah, you drone.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the new one that don't even use the King James Version. So, aside from the way people preach, another area that I see a lot of contention within different denominations is, like I said, the translations. You have the new translation, the New Living Translation, New King James Version. You have Strong Concordant. You've got Amplified. When you're trying to talk to somebody about the Bible, and you have somebody who's going by a different translation, and trying to figure out how to say this without, you know, upsetting a lot of people. But even I myself, having read several translations, I find that a lot of the newer translations tend to be missing a lot of the context that you find in some of the older translations. When you're talking to somebody that's using the New Bible, how do you actually try to point that out without, you know, getting that classic, well, the Bible is what it is. That's just the way it's going to be. You better believe it or not. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, like, the older Bibles, God was more malevolent. He was more vengeful than he is today. Mm-hmm. I call it the Buddy Jesus syndrome. Just because, people, they sugared it down because, you know, and now they want Jesus to be your buddy instead of telling you the facts of what actually happened and why. You know, the why is the big thing that teaches you why you should or shouldn't do something.
Right.
I really like that phrase, Buddy Jesus. I think there's some merch in there somewhere. you know, to again, for me, it goes to man is flawed. We're sinful. And think about it this way. When you translate something, no matter if it's, you know, a report or whatever, the Bible itself, words mean different things to different people. There's you're never going to get the exact same. And to me, I think, in all honesty, and this is just my thought, any study Bible of any translation is good. It goes more in depth in things, and it gives you a good starting point. But as far as the different translations, there's different forms of the English language, Spanish, Russian. There's different dialects. So obviously there's going to be some differences. But Neil's right, though. Like, back in the day, you know, God was a vengeful God. He was a loving God, but vengeful. You go against him, zap, done. You know? And, you know, we were taught to have Jesus as our Savior. We were saved from God's wrath through Jesus.
Yes.
God is love. But at the same time, God is love, which kind of made me go, wait a minute.
Right.
God, you know, but right. Now it's so more. It was. It was like, God loves me. Ooh, lightning bolt. But, you know, nowadays it's more comforting. It's more God is comfort. Jesus is love. And it's got a nice little thing going on. But like I said, personally, as far as translation, screw it. Just stick with a study Bible. Or go to a kid's Bible. Kids' Bibles are fun.
Well, see, we have something called the Catechism in the Catholic Church. If you're not understanding stuff, it goes into a deeper level and helps you, and step by step will help you understand your Bible.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know,
and go ahead.
When you mentioned translation, it wouldn't be until the second time around, you know, after my overdose that I tried to really get a better understanding. And I met some people that, you know, I'm so glad I did, but they were, forget being politically correct, they were what you call book nerd. These guys would do the research, and some of them actually went to some of the locations in the Bible and, you know, firsthand view of where all these things took place. And they talked about the translation. This is where I became hooked on doing the research. And one of the things that I've learned, and this is something that just recently now, I've always known that there was a Greek translation, but I didn't know that there were two Greek translations. One is classical, the other one called Koine. Classical is for the elite and the upper class. Koine is the common citizen language, or common Greek. And the Koine version is where you actually start to see things get broken down more. And one of the easiest examples I can use is the word love. If you actually go back and you look at Koine, you'll see that the word love has four different words because they describe four different situations, four different types of that emotion. Eros, storge, agape, and zoe. Eros is the one that most people should be familiar with because that's where we get the word erotic or erotica from. And that is the physical, intimate, sexual kind of love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, agape, that's the God kind of love. Zoe and storge. I know storge is the love between a mother and daughter. You know, basically a parental kind of love. I forget what zoe was. But anyway, so you have that, and then you have this recent translation where you're reading it, and it just uses love, love, love. But it's not just love in those situations. That's why translation to me is important, and studying is important. Because had I not known that, I would have been just like anybody else and thought, you know, oh, you know, love the Lord your God, love your neighbor. You know, when Jesus asked Peter, do you love me? It was all the same thing, but it's not.
And, well, there's friendship love, and then there's parental love, and then there's, you know, a nurturing, I'm a stranger to you, but I still love you type, you know, love. There's so many different instances in the Bible of love.
It's context. It's how is it used? And again, it's, you know, up to translation of each individual. Like, and I agree with you, Neil, there's different types. Like, we love to do these podcasts. Yep. You know, I love my energy drinks. I love this. I love that. But it's completely different than how I love
junkie.
Secret. It's different than how I love my wife or how I love my daughter. You know, it's completely different.
Love your dog.
Yeah. Well, certain states.
And don't forget, in your case, Matt, how you love your fishing pole.
It's in my actually, true story, both my fishing poles and all my tackle is in my car ready to go. I have my license. I keep it on me at all times.
Yeah, a buddy of mine just gave me a fishing pole, and I haven't had the chance to get my fishing license to go out yet.
That was one of the first things I did as soon as it opened. It was like, yeah, okay. If I disappear, you don't know. And that may or may not be the reason why I haven't done a show for a while.
Right.
My goal is to get a lifetime license so that I don't have to buy one anymore.
I'm doing that next year. It's only like
$89 cheaper in the long run. Yeah, it's cheaper in the long run to just get a lifetime license. But not only that, then I don't have the headache of, well, can I go fishing or can't I?
I'm just going to go.
You know,
that might be a problem for me.
Well, I mean, you know, I got boats out here, pontoon and fishing boats, and, you know, I've got a lake right in front of me, literally.
I'm on my
come on out, man. I'll take you out. We'll go get us some walleyes, and we'll have a little fish fry. I'll do it out on the campfire so you get that good smoke flavor.
And since you like history, Neil is not too far from old mining towns.
Yep. I mean, well, Ely itself has a mine right in the center of it that isn't active anymore. You can tour it.
Shadow, you need to explain to Neil what it's like giving me ideas.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, so along that note, and I kind of wish I knew, I believe they're called young earthers. Mm. I wish I knew somebody because I would love to have their perspective on the show because my next topic. Yeah. Hmm. Let's just say, you know, something's going in the fan and we're going to find out who gets hit with this.
I'll move my fan.
When it comes to the Bible, when you look at, you know, all the events that have taken place, aside from the historical evidence that has, you know, that gets unearthed every year, you know, we get more and more archaeological evidence that confirms the Bible. Excuse me. But when it comes to some of the more intense events, the miraculous events, you know, the pillar of fire by night, the pillar of cloud by day, and even more specifically, the creation. You have the young earthers who believe that the earth and mankind is only about 10,000 years old. But then you have science that go way back. And then you have people like myself who are kind of stuck in the middle, trying to, okay, well, no, what can we pull from each side and how do we put it together to make the most sense out of such an amazing event? What would your thoughts be on that?
Well, for me,
Bible told us everything we needed to know.
For me, I mean, even if you look at what we do know, time, number one, is relevant. That's number one. Number two, their system of time measurement back in biblical days and even before was completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And so even the earth itself has changed. So who's to say that one day back, say, when dinosaurs were around, wasn't our equivalent of 72 hours? You know, you never know. And I don't think it's as young as 10,000. I don't. But I don't think it's billions and billions and billions. Maybe the earth itself, yes. But life here on earth, that to me is progressive. Like, it just depends. Depends on what your thought process is. And it's still up for debate to me. But I don't know. It's the one thing that's always kind of bothered me. I don't really want to say bothered, but kind of made me scratch my head, is these events were written down or deciphered or translated, whatever you want to say, before a lot of the writings happened, like the Dead Sea Scrolls and all the original stuff. So to me, where is that creation coming from? Who was there? Who was saying it? Was it a lucid dream? Was it divine intervention? You know, who's to say what? I mean, the Big Bang Theory, maybe that was exactly what the Bible's talking about. That's where it started. It started with a Big Bang, you know, and again, it's hard to say for me. It's still up for debate.
Well, I mean, I can certainly understand that that position, because I used to have that myself. But then there's a verse in the Bible that says a day with the Lord is as 1,000 years. And it wouldn't be until years later, you know, that I began to think about that. And it's like, that's not even an exact number. That seems to be more like a loose association to the fact that time does not operate the same way with God as it does with us. And in fact, time doesn't even exist to God.
He stands outside of time.
Mm-hmm. Time is only a man-made construct. And of course, you say that to science or religion, you know, both sides are going to have a hissy fit about it, because they'll sit there and try to validate one way or another that time is a real thing, but it's not. And even if you go back historically, when you look at the Jewish calendar, it is so different from the modern Chaldean calendar that we use now, or Babylonian calendar, depending on which one you want to pick.
Even the Chinese calendar is different than ours.
Mm-hmm.
Mayan calendar, that was supposed to be the end of the world a couple of years back.
Yeah. They weren't reading that correctly, I don't think.
Nah, they're missing a couple of pages.
Yeah. Honestly, with the Mayan calendar, I honestly do believe that it wasn't that they were trying to put it at the end of the world. They just got tired of carving all that stone and stopped.
Yeah, that's just where it ended. It didn't mean the calendar ended. Didn't mean the world was going to end.
Yeah.
It's just like our calendars. Just because it's December doesn't mean January isn't coming around.
Yeah.
I mean, let's put it this way. If you were writing numbers on a chalkboard, when you get to the end of the chalkboard, that's it. That's the end of the chalkboard. Same thing with the Mayan calendar.
But the thought still goes on, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going on the walls and ceiling, floor.
I mean, whatever. Yeah. I mean,
I can't there do could that. Be I stones buried
somewhere. I mean, we don't know this, but there could be stones buried somewhere or hidden somewhere that actually are like a continuation of what they started. But we just haven't found that. The archaeology hasn't discovered, you know, them calendars yet. Because, I mean, you look at, like, the Buddhist calendars and over, like, in India, you know, and stuff like that, the Hindu calendars that they have, the giant wheels, you know, and they have several. Yeah, and in India, they have, like, several of them, probably hundreds, I don't know.
Yeah, there are several things, and it's all the collection is called the Veda Text.
Mm-hmm.
But the most common book, the most well-known book in the Veda Text is the Mahabharata. Mm-hmm. And that's the one where Oppenheimer took the quote for the nuclear explosion. I am a destroyer of world. I am become death.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually from the Mahabharata. But you know, go ahead.
No, maybe go ahead.
Okay, so when I think about that, with the young earthers, you know, again, I'm not saying that they're wrong, and I'm not saying that they, you know, they're gonna go to hell, whatever. But it just seemed to me that if you're going to take the Bible literally, then wouldn't it make sense to study the Bible in its entirety? I mean, even the Jewish people have, you know, they have the Torah, but they have other books. It may not be in their Torah, but they still teach it. You don't mm-hmm. really see that in Christianity. It's either the canonized Bible that we have now, or it's nothing.
Well, I mean, we don't have much text beyond that. And the Bible, I think where most people get it wrong is the Bible isn't one book. It's a series of books.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, because that's why they call it the Book of Matthew, the Book of John, you know. And I think that limiting yourself to thinking that the Bible is always to be taken seriously is another thing, because in the Catholic religion, for example, we don't even believe that Genesis actually happened. It's fictional. It's just, you know, made up. It was just for life lessons, because there's no, and the reason why they say this, I think this is just my own personal opinion, but I think the reason why they say that is because we have yet to find enough evidence to confirm that Genesis was real.
Right.
So until we have the evidence like we do in so many other books, for all the other books, you know, we can't say, well, this is real. No, we say it's fictional, but it's a great life lesson. It's, you know.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I've been at recently, is like I grew up reading the Bible, studying the Bible, stuff like this, but you know, to me, it goes back to the whole man is flawed type thing. And once we start translating stuff, I think it's a great user's manual, to kind of put it in layman's. It's a good user's guide. It's a good guide to live by. But to live word by word, number one, that's not the way we are right now. I mean, let's look at the past 20 years. Life's completely different than what it was 20 years ago. Now, but you want to live the same way it was written back, you know, hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago? Not going to happen. Sorry. You know, a lot of it is illegal, number one, that you can't do anymore, like stoning. You know, you can't just go out and start whipping stones at people.
Or daughters having sexual relations with their father on top of a mountain.
Yeah, they might frown upon that, or trying to sacrifice your son, you know. That might be a little bit.
Or a brother throwing a brother.
they may be a little cross with you about that. You got like a little pun there. But it's a good user's guide to me. That's all it is. You know, great words to live by, great study, not a lifestyle. It goes back to what we said earlier. Religion, faith, beliefs, it's a personal journey. Mm-hmm. What do you take out of it? That's not the how-to. That is, you should do. You know what I mean?
All right. So here's the next question then. The Bible does teach us that there are certain inescapable truths. Either they're things that, you know, they're right or they're wrong. With the way society has progressed in just the last 20 years, and the way churches have been changing, do you think that some of these churches are still trying to hang on to the core principles of the Bible, or at least the teaching that should matter the most? Or do you think that things have been kind of morphing into something entirely different? And just as an example, lately I've been, in my research for, you know, studying biblical history, I've also come across some videos of people just blasting other people because they call it false teaching. How do you address that concern with other people when they try to say that you are, that you're following false teaching, or that you're following bad doctrine? How do you respond to that?
Neil, Matt, do you want to tackle that first?
Oh, I'll start this one. I think Aaron thought of me for this question, but to me, it's not a matter of right and wrong. You know, it's again, a personal belief. Like, in a good example, speaking of translations, it's all Greek to me. I don't know, but
that looks like Russian.
It is. It was. Don't mind my dad jokes. I'm tired. Think of terrorists, ISIS, and everything like that. Think of them. They think they're doing the right thing. They think they're, you know, anybody who stands up for a belief system, they think they're doing the right thing. You know, right and wrong is a same thing with faith. It's a personal belief. What we're doing, even in the paranormal field, we feel is right. We're trying to find answers, trying to promote positivity. Some people don't. Some people don't believe that. And even in religions, different religions, we spoke about the different denominations. Some Catholics feel that Methodists are terrible people. Some Methodists feel that Catholics are terrible people. You know, it's again, a personal belief. There is no right and wrong. It's like time. That's relevant. It's relevant to the person.
Right. Well, the only reason why I ask is, you know, like I said, when you see a lot of the progression, or a cultural or even societal progression happening in church, and you try to compare it to the Bible, it almost feels like, I'll use one example. A lot of people have been attacking Joel Osteen and Joyce Meyer because there are those who believe that they are teaching either a false doctrine or bad doctrine, and it's the concept of prosperity ministry or prosperity teaching. Now, prosperity isn't against the Bible, but is what they're teaching, does that line up with the Bible? You were going to say, Neil?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, you can actually look throughout history of the Catholic Church. Our message has never changed, ever.
Right.
Our message has always, for hundreds of years now, stayed the same. Actually, thousands. The one thing that doesn't ever change is the core beliefs and the core teachings. The only thing that does change is if evidence is provided supporting a reason for a change.
Right.
And it doesn't mean, you know, like there's a lot of people that make jokes about how the Pope wears a fish hat, or the bishops wear fish hats and stuff like that. Well, I mean, symbol of a fish is Jesus, you know.
Well, it's not pagan, I know what you're talking about. And I'll talk more about that after this. Go ahead.
But what I was trying to get at is, the core teachings and the core beliefs don't change ever.
Right.
In the Catholic Church. And I don't know that any other faith can really say that. Because I don't know a whole lot about them. So I don't know, you know, like how they've changed or progressed. But I do know that when evidence presents itself, they will change certain teachings.
Right.
Well, I also feel like, too, that I agree that the message should stay the same, but how it's delivered should be adjusted. I mean,
right.
It's just like going to different cities and different towns. You know, they all have their different cultures and stuff like that. Again, that's why, you know, shopping around for different churches to find yours is important, because again, there's some preachers and pastors who are just upbeat and some who are by the book will put you to sleep if you, you know, better than NyQuil. But, you know, I think the church as a whole, and I'm not just talking about one religion, all religions, I think any type of religious belief system, you have to adjust because times are different. You have to, you have to tweak your delivery system. Keep the same message, but just tweak the delivery.
And just use different words.
Exactly.
To say the same thing.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, well, you look at these kids today, and they have a totally different way of speaking than we did when we were kids. You know what I mean? I mean, so in saying that, to properly reach them, you have to talk like they do.
Exactly.
And I believe the Catholic Church has nailed that pretty good, but at the same time, they are missing a few things too. You know, when it comes to reaching out to the younger generations, I think that I don't want them to change anything, but I want them to be more upbeat. Like, I can give you an example. If you go to the St. Paul, Church of St. Paul over in Ham Lake in Minnesota, they will rock your socks, dude. You will just be like, yeah, I love this. And then you come here to Ely and Father Charlie, God bless him, great guy. But he's just not charismatic like Jim Livingston is. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Father Jim is just amazing. He's got a real good delivery. That's what hooked me in. You know what I mean? He has that oomph that you're looking for. You know what I mean? Lifts your heart, you know, and glorifies God all at the same time and everything, you know. But then you come here and it's like really droll, really boring.
Well,
and it doesn't reach out to the younger crowd.
Sounds like he took some speaking lessons from the teacher in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Something. Yeah, I don't know.
Bueller.
I just had some weird. I don't know why. By the way, Neil, my brain works really weird and different.
Shadow. Tell us something we don't know.
But I just had some weird symbolism. You know. The spiritual journey is like fishing. You have your old style hook and worm on a stick, and then you have your, you know, crankbaits and your spinners, your spoons, and all this high tech stuff. Yeah. You know, and it's again, it's up to your style. Like, I like fly fishing. I like spin. I like spoons. You know, it's just what you like.
It's all, you're right. It is a matter of preference. But what I'm trying to get at is, if you want to continue to fill the pews, you better learn how to talk to these younger crowds or they're walking.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
You know what I mean? Well, and I don't mean it just to fill the pews, but I mean, just, you know, you need to learn how to talk to your people.
Well, it's like, like Sister Act. What was it? Sister Act 2. She had to, they had to change everything about the whole church, the whole choir, just to, oh, is that what that was? Crypto?
Yeah, it's a link for cryptocurrency.
Oh, okay. But I'm glad you can read it. But
I'm very proficient with Google Translate.
There you go. But no, 100%. I'm with you on that one, Neil, because it's just like with anything else, you know, let's be real here. Our time and the generation's times, they're all going to be rolling over. Some one day we won't be here. And who's going to continue these beliefs? Who's going to continue the journey? Is it going to be us? Maybe. But you've got to look at the next generation. You've got to be able to get them passionate. And that's what it comes down to. What can you do with people?
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, what gets these kids passionate? You know, you have to be able to connect.
And see, what sucks is there's a lot of, I call this the largest retirement community I've ever been in, because there is a larger percentage of the population out here are older folks. So because of that, Father Charlie isn't as jubilant, and he isn't, you know, he's trying to maintain what they know, but he's not reaching the younger crowd that is starting to emerge. I'm noticing more and more younger people coming, and some of them are tourists that are fellow Catholics as well, but you don't want them to just go, well, if I come here on vacation again, I'm not going to that church.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you're losing people then.
If I can ask you, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Neil, but if I can ask a question then sure. What would be your suggestion to these preachers and these spiritual leaders to find that balance between the old school and the new generation? Because I think that's the biggest question.
I think the delicate balance of that is be more jubilant, but not forceful.
Right.
And I think that would, and what I mean by jubilant is like, you know, more upbeat and don't be so droll. I think that once the older people, the older generation, I think they would actually catch on and love it. And not mourn their faith so much as I've watched them do. And sit there and rather balance a checkbook than listen to what Father Charlie's saying.
Right.
I mean, I've seen it time and time again. They're either staring at a phone or they're doing something else other than actually listening to the sermon that's being preached up there or listening to the Bible readings and stuff like that. Because we have all of it. But the jubilant part isn't there. And I've noticed, the more positive and upbeat you are, the more people are apt to listen to you. And it doesn't matter if you're young or old. It reaches out to the same, in the same way.
Right. But see, okay, so along that, how do you rectify the situation where, because I understand you want to evolve the message to fit the current generation or, you know, the current culture or whatever, however you want to look at it. But where do you draw the line from changing the word to fit the time to changing it in such a way that it becomes, that it ends up not being what the word actually said? And I'm not going to get into any particular area because this is not what the show is about. But there are a lot of things that the Bible says is wrong, but today's church says is right. And the concern that I have with a situation like that is, where do you draw the line to where, okay, I know I need to address the situation and I need to stay in line with what the word says. How much do I change it? And I don't mean like change what the scripture says, but how much do I modify it so that it makes sense for today without contradicting what it was meant to say?
Give a modern instance.
In the what?
Giving a modern instance really helps people relate. And what I guess I mean by that is during a pastor or priest's sermon, what they should be doing is giving more relatable instances in current life.
Right.
And comparing them to the old word and helping them understand that the old word actually is timeless. It's just that the situations we face are different.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that's really hard to do for some. I don't think all pastors and priests can do that.
Right.
I had a pastor when I was in San Diego, a Methodist pastor. He did the same thing. Like, and I think that's probably the best is, I mean, that's how you're going to start getting these younger generations involved is if, again, you can relate to it. You know, talk about a current event, talk about whatever, and use scripture to relate to it. But also let them know too that obviously the times were different. And use the example like we used earlier, stoning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, obviously don't see that unless you're watching a riot, but you don't see
unless you're in the Middle East.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a judicial practice that everybody uses. But no. And just say, you know, just be truthful. Be upfront. Be truthful. Don't try to hide it. Don't try to sugarcoat it. You know, in even with the older generation, they can handle it. They can handle the truth. They want mm-hmm. to know the truth. The younger generation is confused and they want to find this truth. We still want to find this truth. The only way to do it is to hear it.
Yep.
So
present it properly. Yeah.
Yeah. So just say it. Don't sugarcoat it. Don't try to baby feed it. Just say it.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we're going to have to do a part two for this because there's still a lot more to talk about. But I will wrap this up with one last thing. When it comes to an issue with the denominational rift that I see, another common problem is having the courage to say, even in your faith, I don't know or I don't have the answer. How important is it to tell people, or to be honest with people, when you don't have an answer, to just say, I don't know the answer to that, instead of just saying, well, this is what the Bible says, take it or leave it? How important is it to be honest and just say, I don't know?
I think it's extremely important because both of your faith journeys are about to take a leap forward once you learn.
I agree. You have to. I mean, that's the whole part of everything we do, whether it's spiritual, whether it's educational, career-based, paranormal. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some things that we just don't know. Either A, we just are ignorant to that fact, and what I mean is we just don't know it, mm-hmm. or we're not supposed to. You know, and if somebody comes up to you and asks you something, like if Neil asked me a question and I don't know it, and I say, you know what, I don't know that answer. But you know what would be great? Let's find out together. Mm-hmm. Not only am I building my personal belief and my strengths, but I'm building a new friendship, a new partnership, and I'm growing Neil's faith as well. And on mm-hmm. top of that, I'm giving him the faith that I will be there for him, just like a friend should be. So mm-hmm. I'm restoring the faith.
And you're getting a journey.
Exactly. And again, it comes back to leading by example. And even if you do know it to me, for me, even if I do know the answer, I don't want to tell that person. I want to say, you know what? Let's find out together. And I mm-hmm. will help guide them because the personal gain that they will get will outweigh me just saying it.
Right. Well, and my last 2 cents on that is no matter what, whether it's in a spiritual matter, whether it's in everyday work life, being open and honest is the one thing that's going to help us better ourselves, both on an individual level as well as a social level or public level. Mm-hmm. And my hope with this, as I mentioned before with the show, is that not to get anybody to push anybody in any direction. But I'm hoping that those who watch and those who listen are inspired to start asking questions and just start looking for themselves. Because at the end of the day, to quote a very well-known friend of ours, Matt, at the end of the day, it comes down to establishing a personal relationship between you and Jesus, you and God.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And how you get there may not be the same way as how I got there. Mm-hmm. But I hope to see you there, period. Right. Mm-hmm. I hope to see you there in the end.
Doesn't matter how you get from A to C as long as you still get to C. B doesn't matter.
Right. So anything you guys want to shout out real quick before I wrap it up?
Thanks all for right. watching, everybody.
You gave all the good shout-outs earlier.
All right.
Here. Yeah, right on top here. No, take your pick.
All right. Well, if you guys have questions, you know, if for those of you who are watching and listening, if you have any questions, you can always find me on Facebook, From the Wild Podcast, and message me. If you have something that you don't agree with, if you have something you would like me to look into, if you have an experience you want to share, get it to me and, you know, we'll talk about it. And regardless of what the world is like, I know the whole world is completely upside down. We have social media and mainstream media and politicians and woke ideology trying to tell us who the enemy is. Just remember, and I've said this on my other show, I was a friend, I was a relative, I was a kind stranger until somebody told you I wasn't. And with that being said, I hope all of you find the answer that you're looking for. May you all be blessed. May you all be prosperous. And I hope you all find peace. So until next time, if you're out in the wild, just look for the light. You're not alone.